Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to my domain. I teach criminal justice classes in here, fall and spring. And I walk in like that and I say good morning or good afternoon. And you know what the students usually say?
What?
Nothing. So I have to say it again. And then they usually respond. So thank you for at least responding. And you didn't even grunt or groan. And most of you aren't wearing pajamas. That's encouraging. So it's nice to be with adults. And sincerely, thank you for coming to the conference and thank you for choosing to come to this session. It means a lot to me to engage with all of you. You know, I was asking to be a part of this because I wanted the opportunity to collaborate and to communicate with pastors and leaders. And so I was invited to be a part of it, and then I found out I had to pay money to be a part of it. But I also understand you paid money to be a part of it. So we're all on even grounds there, and I say thank you for the investment of your money and your time to come to this. So for the next hour is what they've allotted us. I really don't want to become this expert facilitator or teacher, because I cannot teach you about human trafficking. It's an evolving, growing, hopefully a topic that we're going to be able to defeat, ideally. But what I want to do is just open a dialogue with all of you that we can continue to have. And so I have a plan of action. First of all, let me go back, and you see I'm calling this Human Trafficking, an Update for Church Leadership, because I want to speak to pastors and church leaders. In your brochure, it said abolitionist movement and human trafficking. Well, you're in the right classroom. We are talking about that. We just had different titles. But what I'd like to do this afternoon, here in a moment, I'd like to begin with a word of prayer. Then I'd like to ask all of you to introduce yourselves to all of us. And then I want to show you some purposes of our session. I really want to share with you the authority that you have to abolish modern day slavery, human trafficking. I hope you can leave here today feeling empowered to go be the man or woman of God that God has empowered you to be, to go help fight this effort to abolish human trafficking. And we're going to talk about some legal definitions, because I think we have to leave here all on the same page as what we're looking at when we're talking about human trafficking. And there's some key terms that I find intriguing that I just want to empower you with. And then I want to talk to you about your role, the church's role in the abolitionist movement. So before I go to prayer, I just want to share with you that this day has been an event that's been growing. It's been changing. Good afternoon. That's normal, too, to have late students. Please come on in. For me, this is exciting. It was 2 years ago that we had a PALCON, and it was at College Church. Did anyone go to the session about human trafficking 2 years ago? That's kind of exciting, that this is a whole new group of individuals. What happened there was that representatives from Point Loma Nazarene University came all the way from California to speak about the efforts on human trafficking. Some of what I'm going to show you today was developing even 2 years ago. So it's exciting for me. I attended that session. That was an opportunity for me to begin to know more of the church effort in the abolitionist movement. But it also inspired me. I thought, if we can have people come here from Point Loma, then certainly Olivet and our region should be presenting and casting these opportunities in this conversation as well. So for this to actually be happening is exciting for me, and I'm again grateful that you're with us. Before I go to prayer, I want to recognize two really important people. They're in this room, actually two and a half or three. I'll count you, Josh. You'll get it, my weird sense of humor. This is about collaboration. And I want to encourage all of us to network and work together. Not network like politic, but network in that we are to work together in this effort. And so when I talk collaboration, our model is what is happening right here in our county. We're very blessed in this county to have some incredible professionals that have sensitive hearts, that are team players. They're not in these turfs or silos. They're all about working together and empowering each other's efforts. And we developed back in 2012 a human trafficking task force. And with us today is what I consider half of the two really important pillars, and that is Ms. Cheryl Chamberlain. Would you wave at everybody? There she is. Cheryl is an advocate, is a professional. She is a representative of the Kankakee County Center Against Sexual Assault. We call it KCCASA, KC-CASA, Kankakee County Center Against Sexual Assault. That agency has been doing incredible work over the years with sexual assault victims, being advocates for those victims, supporting the prosecutors. I actually should let you talk about it, but supports the court system, law enforcement, prosecutors, judges on holding individuals accountable for sexual assault, sexual exploitation. They have become the hub for us to deal with sexual exploitation and human trafficking. The other component of that, and Marcia's not with us yet, I'm hoping she'll walk in late, she is with Catholic Charities. And Catholic Charities has a ministry for migrant workers and those who, their focus is on labor trafficking. And that's when we get to the definitions, we need to see that there's two components that we're really talking about. So welcome, Cheryl, thanks for being with us. Another special person for us is Miss Natalie Wangler. She's the young lady in the back room that many of you saw. Natalie is a senior this year in our criminal justice program. She's also our teaching assistant. And she's an example of the modern day student that has a passion to go out and fight social injustice. And she has stayed around this summer to work on an internship. And she's supporting us with this conference. And I'm glad she's here. She's a blessing. And Josh, I'll give you a shout out right now. It's Broward. Josh Broward is with an organization called Free the Girls, and he'll explain that a little bit more. But it was in the M15 conference. Who went to that this year in Kansas City? Okay. We, as the Nazarene churches and Nazarene higher ed institutions, we had another summit focused on human trafficking, and we're empowering the universities to get involved in this. And Josh and Greg Arthur are representatives of Free the Girls, and that was our, of all things, they're in Indiana. We're, what, 60 miles away, less than that, and we had to go to Kansas City to really connect. But neat things like that happen. So, all right, so now I feel better knowing those key people are here, and then in a minute, you're all going to introduce yourselves, and you get to be important people too, because we are glad you're here, and we're going to carry on this conversation. So let me open with a word of prayer. Father, I bow right now, and I just praise you for this opportunity. Thank you for each person that is in this room. Thank you for their selflessness, their willingness to give their lives away to serve you and to help others. I pray right now that you would just empower us over this next hour to have a good conversation, to really open our minds and our hearts as to the issues that are going on, this injustice in our world with human trafficking, sexual exploitation, labor trafficking, just the sinfulness of what is going on. And I pray that you would empower us with vision on how we can go back to our communities and serve better and more efficiently. So please be with us right now. I give you this hour, and I give you praise in your name. Amen. Okay, so here's my question to get you guys prompted. I would ask that you could just briefly tell us your story on how you first heard about human trafficking, how you got interested in this. I don't want to say how did you get involved in it, because it just sounds really weird, unless I say, how did you get involved in the abolitionist movement? So any way you want to phrase that question, would you respond? Todd, I'm going to put you on the spot.
My name is Todd Peeler. I'm pastor here in Kankakee at Westbrook Church of the Nazarene, also on the adjunct faculty here at Olivet. And probably heard about it here. There's been a lot of talk on campus about this. I think it was it a couple years ago with the Army, the kids that were being, I can't remember now, it was in Africa, I think. But anyway, kind of the boys.
Boy soldiers?
Yeah, the boy soldiers. Really was where I first heard of it, and then it's just something that keeps coming to the front of conversations, and I know, you know, it's happening right here in our community.
Okay, so thank you. Highlight what he said. If you're not aware that within the idea of modern-day slavery and human trafficking, there's many components, and he highlighted one, and that is child soldiers. And so in other countries, and I'm very sensitive to Liberia, I had a son serve in the Peace Corps there for 2.5 years after their civil war, but he was still seeing the aftermath of that in their communities. But when you have children being abducted by these warlords and forced to go to war, forced in the sense that even to kill their own parents, a psychological thing begins to happen, and we're going to talk about that yet today too. Josh.
I'm Josh Brower, and I first got involved with the abolitionist movement because I started working at a church that was involved with the abolitionist movement.
Okay.
And we partner with Free the Girls, which it fights sex trafficking by giving survivors the ability to start new lives as small business women. So we do that. The means for that, their small business is selling used bras that are donated from all over the world. They come to our church in Northwest Indiana, $150,000 a year, and we sort them, process them, and then send them to our partners overseas where the ladies sell them, and it's a transition plan. They go back to school, they develop a different business, they get a mainstream job, but it gives them a stability and confidence boost and sustaining, like the money to sustain themselves and their kids while they're in transition.
Okay, thank you. Very good. Which speaks to the idea of we're dealing with victims, and what we're learning finally, especially in law enforcement and prosecution, is that we're dealing with victims rather than offenders. And we have to have a victim-centered approach and help them recover, restore, go through the process of healing and being, healed, because there is the post-traumatic stress side of it. But to empower young ladies to have that freedom to market, to sell something other than themselves is very, very powerful. Okay. Cheryl, would you like to introduce yourself and explain any more than what I did?
Cheryl Chamberlain from Casey Casa. For the last 11 years, I've been coordinating the county sexual assault response team, which involves community members. Craig Bishop was an initial member of that group, and his security department here is part of that, law enforcement, prosecution, the local hospitals. So we work together and try to resolve issues for sexual assault victims in our area and on the state level. And over the 19 years that I've been with the agency, I think that we've always been aware of trafficking, but we didn't call it that so much. It was prostitution, pimps controlling the prostitutes or abusing prostitution, and knowing that prostitutes a lot of times are victims of childhood sexual abuse and physical abuse. So we've always done work in that realm, but until law started to change and really bring things into awareness and calling it trafficking, it took the focus off of the victims of these crimes and put them on the offenders of the crimes. There's been a lot of work done with legislation in the state of Illinois in regards to prostitution and criminal charges. Minors are no longer allowed to be charged with prostitution under the age of 18. a second offense for a victim of, or a woman who is arrested for prostitution cannot be upgraded to a felony. It remains a misdemeanor. Hopefully one day they won't be charged at all with a crime. And currently there's a legislation that's pending that will give victims of trafficking what they call an affirmative defense in court that they are being trafficked, and if there are safety concerns for that person, to be able to use that affirmative defense to be able to say that I was arrested for prostitution but I was forced to do this, that there are some safety measures within this bill that is going to allow the judge and the prosecutors what they call in-camera hearings, meaning it's very private, so that they have a safe place to and have the opportunity to disclose that they are being trafficked. Currently, we are doing some work with the county jail. We have an advocate that goes in whenever there's an arrest of prostitution, and we're allowed to talk with them and inform them of what their rights are and what help is available. We've had some that have self-disclosed. There's some that we suspect are being trafficked, but they're not disclosing. There's still issues of drug abuse and fear and things like that where they don't feel safe enough to come forward yet. But we're out there in the community trying to open that door. Attitudes need to be changed. We've realized that within law enforcement and hospitals and those resources that a victim of trafficking is going to need, that there is a disbelief and that they don't know how to open those services. One of the victims we took to a hospital, they didn't want to treat her like a sexual assault victim under the guidelines for the state of Illinois. They said it wasn't a sexual assault. Victims of sex trafficking who are being looked at as prostitutes are victims of sexual assault. So that we see that we have a lot of work to do and services that are needed in the community. And I just want to say thank you to all of you for being here, because it's very important as service providers where you have limited funding and restricted funding to have individuals involved in the effort that have more flexibility and that can fill those holes that the service providers can't do. So thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. And whether you're from Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, all of that is true. It's for you to go discover where your agency's at. I can almost guarantee you the attitude issues are there within your law enforcement and elsewhere. So it's all level ground there. It's just where your resources. And Casey Casa is a great example of an organization that you should see if you have within your community and begin to partner. But we'll talk about that more here in a minute. Mark, please.
Yep, Nazarene pastor in Michigan, and aware of it just because when my children were in a Christian school, they got involved with the Invisible Children movement and, okay, again, the child soldiers. And so that was very significant for them for a while. And then we have formed a compassionate ministry team within our church, fairly good-sized church, and we just want this on our radar. We're close to Lansing and Flint and want to be aware if there's problems and try to respond to it in an appropriate way.
Very good. Thank you.
Roger Davis, at Pastor Streeter in Pontiac, and here because my daughter is involved with providing shelter for girls getting out of prostitution. I really haven't been involved myself, but wanted to know more.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Brian Wangler, pastor in Chicago, and became aware just from listening and watching what was going on in the city, and then my daughter talks a lot about it.
Okay, there is a relationship there. He's an awesome dad. Gave us an awesome young lady. Carlo.
My name's Carlo DiVicurio. I'm a pastor in Michigan, Oak Cliffs, Michigan. First time I was in high school, and a girl that was in my graduating class, her boyfriend was quite a bit older. Some of the stuff when we were graduating. She was a straight A student. We never even thought she would be involved in this kind of thing. And her and the guy that she was, was her boyfriend or whatever, they killed somebody. And that's how she finally got out of it.
Yeah. First-hand exposure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm Will Hayworth from Sherman, Illinois, South of Springfield, and not real involved, not at all involved, just I've had exposure through you, but also through, I've had some people there at the church, and just the fact that it always seemed like it was something that happened somewhere else. They talked about how truck stops are one of the areas where you're most active, and I know about every city has truck stops.
Yes.
So, somewhere close to us that it is taking place.
Yes. And Sherman is just outside of Springfield, Illinois. So even though Sherman is a nice small community, you really have all of the same resources and issues of the larger metropolitan area of Springfield. So
right.
You can minister.
First heard about it 3 years ago during General Assembly in Indianapolis. They had a workshop on it, and I debated and debated and debated on whether to go to that one or another one, and I ended up going to another one, but I never got away from that poster.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year ago, I was at Indianapolis First Church, and I talked to a lady there that had a display up, and she was working with women, and so it's kind of drawn me.
Good. Okay. Thank you for that. And I'm glad you are drawn.
Mark Hurstman. I'm from Spiceland, Indiana, currently unassigned as a pastor at this point, but I suppose we all kind of saw things on TV and movies and kind of gave it the hunch something's going on, but then it was probably 3 years ago I read that book, God in a Brothel, that really grabbed me. And then my daughter is just finishing her freshman year at Taylor University, and she is very interested in this. And I said, you know what, it scares me to death, but if she's going to be involved, then I need to kind of know what's going on too.
Yeah. So. I respect that. Well said. Yes, sir.
Randy Owens. Pastor in Saginaw, Michigan. Saginaw's on the I-75 corridor going north. And does have its own set of issues, about sex trafficking, that kind of thing. And our church has been involved in several one-off sort of things more than ongoing. Built a relationship with Liberty Project there in Michigan, and done some things like that. A positive. I first became aware serving as a missionary for 12 years, and so in the Middle East, where a consular of one of the embassies was caught enslaving and housing Sri Lankan maids, taking their passports, selling them for prostitution, taking the maids and selling them.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we moved to West Africa, where we lived in Senegal, just north of Mauritania, which is one of only two countries that still has legal slavery. In November, I'm headed to Cambodia, where child sex trafficking is endemic.
Okay.
And I'm not going for that purpose to deal with those issues, but to teach pastors. And so just to be more of this, more of an awareness.
Okay.
Kind of remind me of the situation.
Okay. Appreciate that. And what you're touching on there is key for our discussion today, is that when we talk modern day slavery, and we want to abolish that. We want to abolish all forms of slavery, but we tend to, the buzz of society today is human trafficking, and it's not just domestically, it's international. And what I see is, when I hear people's stories of how they get involved, it'll be because they focused in on a concern internationally. And then they're naive to the fact that it's happening domestically. Or you could find someone who is totally outraged and emotional about what's happening domestically, but they're not in tune with what's happening internationally. So what we want to do today is just kind of umbrella all of that. And the umbrella is the work of the church. And because Christ, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but Christ is focused on freeing the oppressed and bringing healing and restoration. So I'm glad you spoke on all of those dynamics, and we're going to want to keep that in mind. Yeah.
I'm Joyce, and we live in Grand Junction, Colorado. I'm just a children's minister, but I'm married to a pastor that is also the police chaplain. And so have gotten involved in that a little bit through that, but then also my son is a major in the military that's traveled the world, and he had to take special courses on it and was aware of it too. So when I went to the course in the General Assembly, the seminar there, then I could talk to my son, being in the military, that they realize that it's a big problem in almost every country that
yes.
they go to, including here in the States. And so, here I am.
Thank you. That's powerful. When you think that the military is training their personnel to be sensitive to recognizing these issues, then don't you think it's appropriate for us to have ministers and laypersons aware? We're active in our community trying to make sure law enforcement and firefighters and paramedics are aware, because anybody who's involved in other people's lives could see indications. And that's part of what I hope you can take away from this, is realizing that you are all empowered to report. And it's just like most of you are familiar with required reporting of child abuse. We're getting to the point where everyone needs to be empowered to make that phone call. And we're going to give you that resource by the end of the day. So, yes, ma'am.
I'm Gay Maddock, and I'm from Maryville, Indiana. I'm the deaconess. And I first heard about it at Christmas. One of the ladies from our church gave us a list of stores that participated in this. And, you know, and so I tried to avoid them. And so I'm more interested.
Okay, so stores that had a poor rating for buying products from countries that are using human slavery. And there's a website that you can look at, and you can see what are the products. Free trade products is what's always highly promoted, and that's supposed to be an indication that that product is coming from a country where people are being treated fairly, paid fairly. So that's another component that we're dealing with. It's amazing when you get into this. It's not only labor trafficking issues and sexual exploitation, but there's also people being trafficked for the harvest of their organs. And so this only gets worse the more you think about all the dynamics of it. And we're not going to go into the study of all of that today, but it is about awareness. Yes, ma'am. Saw it firsthand as well.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Stacia. I'm also from California. I'm a pastor. I'm here. My pastor said something about the Nazarene religion. I dealt with it firsthand two cousins that are human trafficker survivors. Mm-hmm. One of them is my age, and my other one is 25, 26, and she's only been out of the, she calls it the game, she's only been out of it for about 5 or 6 years now. Two of her children are from her pen. So dealt with that, you know, that way, and then like she said, the area by our house, and our church, our women, we went to a seminar a couple months ago, and there was a group called Hookers for Jesus, and she was human trafficked, and she kind of came out and talked to us and let us know about the situation. I'm working at an elementary school with girls and having girls myself, and I'm dealing with my cousin, something you want to get interested in, trying to keep the girls off the streets.
Okay. Thank you for that. Richard.
Hey, I'm Richard Wadsworth. I'm a retired minister in the Church of the Nazarene. And I first became aware of it when a friend of mine, we were in high school, or just out of high school, was shot because he tried to defend one of the girls and shot him right in the head and killed him. And then when I was in the service in the different countries, it was just everywhere. And just couldn't believe how much, you know, how little young the girls were that were pimping, you know, that were prostituting.
Yeah.
And I know that there were pimps behind them, you know. And then I read the missionary book on it, and I just re-established it in my mind that something ought to be done. And I didn't know what I could do. We're in mid-Michigan. Our church is running about 650. We have all kinds of programs, but I don't think we have anything that has to do with human trafficking and what we can do. You know, we may not have it in our area. We may have it. I don't know. But I think we need to do something about it.
Okay. Thank you. And I agree. We do need to do something, and I can guarantee you it's in your area. I can't prove it right this minute, but I can guarantee it. Okay. Don.
My name is Don Harrison. I'm currently the pastor in Carlinville, Illinois. Not by title of human trafficking, but it has been part of my life since a child. My sisters and other kids from my church were, God rescued them from a kidnapping for pornography. An awesome story, but people came into the church, talked to the adults, and brought an equal number of girls and boys, but something went haywire and people ended up running, and left behind cameras, videotapes, and you know, lingerie. Yeah. And I was just a young man then, and I'm a young kid then, and it's just been part of our lives. We've opened up an unwed mother's home, which some girls came in were from that situation. We've moved, taken girls out of state to get them in better situations. It's always been just a part of our lives. And then at the Fruit Holiness Conference just a handful of months back, I guess that's probably about a year ago, God just, I went to the presentation on human trafficking there, and they were from Point Loma, and God just impressed upon my heart, you know, and realized that this is something that gave it a name, gave it a vision, gave it a purpose, and I'm just here because the Bible says to rescue those being led away to death. That's why I'm here.
There you go. Okay. Thank you. Well, for me, I used to be a police officer for years. I started my career here as a police officer and then went to Seymour, Indiana, for all you Hoosiers, and was an officer down there for a number of years. Before that, I was in probation and parole work. And so I didn't really focus on human trafficking. I guess I was aware of what was happening internationally only because you heard things on the news, kind of had that stigma of what's happening over in the Asian countries. You hear rumor of Americans going over there and spending money for sex. But that's so distant, it didn't touch me. And that's the way most people are. If it's not impacting your own life, you're not sensitive to it. And then it wasn't until I started on faculty here that I began to hear the hearts of our students. And they're bringing things up like IJM. And I'm like, what is IJM? International Justice Mission, a huge organization working to fight human trafficking internationally. So if the students are in tune to it, I wanted to be in tune. Well, then I find out that Cheryl and others had started a task force. So I started going to that. And before I knew it, I find out Point Loma is working on this effort. And so I find myself becoming a partner, but also a representative of our university. And that leads us to where we're at today. But thank you all for sharing your reality. So here's the strange thing. My little joke is I'm over there in the vendor area this week. Y'all visited tables. And I was joking because I'm in a room with the big dogs. Nazarene Publishing House and all of those guys with all these nice booths. And we had our little table, which we've recreated back there. All kinds of literature for you. The books are ours, by the way. We're not selling them. But the handouts are for you. But I thought, this is my little study. Here I am just representing and seeking to talk with you and engage you. A few people did. But I thought, are they ignoring this because it's an uncomfortable topic? Or are we just not on people's radar? And so my hope is every time we have a PowCon or any other event, we can have a group of people present to keep talking about this, because it has to become a conversation. So watch this quick video just about essentially opening our eyes to this issue. So it's time to wake up, which is an understatement. Of course, if you're my students, I'd be telling you it's time to wake up too. You all doing okay? Okay. There are three takeaways I hope that you can leave here with today. And the focus is, I'd like to empower you to know what to pray for. I'd like to empower you with knowing how to partner with the organizations that are in your community that are already involved in this effort, and I'd like to empower you with knowing how you can provide the provisions that are needed by those agencies. And we'll talk about that just a little bit more. But what's that look like? I want you to be aware of what's going on. We've had some of that discussion, but I got some more PowerPoints we're going to talk about. I want you to be aware of praying, partnering, and providing. It's the three P's, okay? That slide will pop up again later for those that are taking notes. You know we have a quiz at the end, right? Okay, we don't. We don't really. Okay, so I want to be your Barnabas. I want to be your encourager. I want to allow you to walk out of here today not feeling bad about the subject, but feeling motivated, because God's not wanting us to be defeated on this. The war is there. The abolitionist movement is there. That little video showed that this isn't a topic that's just in the history books. We still have prejudices. We have unfair practices, discrimination in America. It's certainly worldwide. What we know as historical slavery may not look the same way in America today as it was, but we have people being oppressed and being misused, mistreated, and it's the same way internationally. We have been empowered to make a difference. What's that look like? All of these. Scripturally, the Great Commission, the Great Commandment, and then talking about the Nazarene Church. It's our own general superintendents have had a voice. Wesleyan Holiness Consortium, and now Compassionate Ministries. And what does that look like? Here's a reminder to you. I won't go into a lengthy sermon, but here's a reminder of what Jesus said in Matthew 28. Having all of the authority given to him by God, he's giving you authority through his authority. He's giving you the power to go out and teach, to make disciples. Can we end human trafficking if all the people were reconciled to Christ? Yes, we could. And isn't that what the gospel message is all about? Reconciling people, bringing healing and restoration. If we could do that with the offenders, with the users, the customers, and with the victims, we would have everybody healed. So what's that mean? What we're talking about all the time as a church is the gospel message of restoration and forgiveness. If we can apply that on the streets effectively, we're combating human trafficking effectively. So the great commandment is in our face, because most of us will say, well, wait a minute, this person's different than me. I don't know how to handle this person. I don't agree with their beliefs. I don't agree with their lifestyle. And now we have an issue of, well, do we really love our neighbor? And so we're going to have to come to terms not only that this is happening, but it's happening with individuals that maybe we don't feel comfortable having a real relationship with. And that only adds more problems, because you're dealing with individuals that have a hard time with relationships and trust. And if they can't trust Christians, then it's a shame on us, not on them. They have every reason not to trust people, but they need to find authentic, caring, surrendered people. And this is where it really gets exciting, is that on January 29th of this year, this is 2015, yes? In January, it was the Nazarene Church News reported this title: Churches to Stand United Against Human Trafficking on Freedom Sunday. The general superintendents have said, we as a Church of the Nazarene are going to become a part of the abolitionist movement. Now, if you don't feel empowered enough by Christ's words, then we have our own leadership in the church saying, it's time, folks. And that's another message I have for you, is working with our collaborative partners in the community. They're saying, it's time, church. It's time, faith-based organizations, that you begin to get involved with us. And there's a healthy way to do that, and I want to present that to you in a minute. But this is something that most of you don't know about, and it amazes me. And I have a flyer for you in the back on this. It's the Declaration for Freedom. The Wesleyan Holiness Consortium is made up of a large number of the Protestant denominations. Nazarene Church is involved in that. The Methodist Church, Baptist churches. You can go on their website and see a list of denominations that have joined the consortium. The Nazarene Church has as well. And if you read through this document, it's empowering as to what we're being called to do. And there's a list of seven specific things that they're affirming. Let me read the seventh one. We affirm that as a collaborative network, we must think deeply, work holistically, and engage locally and globally. Complex issues drive modern slavery. Therefore, multiple solutions must be undertaken. These will proceed from the fabric of who we are in Christian community, naturally flowing into what we do. It's a call for us to be collaborative. And that's why I'm glad Cheryl's here. Literature from all kinds of organizations, including Free the Girls and Josh, ways that we can collaborate. So one of the things I want to convey to you is that we have a sign-up sheet. It's been available all week and only a few people signed up. But I would encourage all of you, sign up if you're interested in our criminal justice program, our student-led social justice club, to communicate with you and your church about the possibility that we could bring a team of students to your church and we don't even know what it'd look like. And it could be different for every church, but we're envisioning maybe we travel to your church for a lunch on a Saturday, and any and all of your church leadership, lay people that are interested in this topic could come and our students could present facts about human trafficking, which our students are prepared to give you more statistics. The only thing I want to touch statistically is what you saw in that video, because I come from a law enforcement perspective, and that is I know statistics aren't totally accurate because victims don't report. So what we know, the Polaris Project reports really good statistics. Other organizations do as well. I'm not disputing them. It's just for me, I think it's underreported because there's really more going out there, but people are afraid, are intimidated. They just don't report. That's studied and proven in all crimes across the world. But what we want to do is come and teach the facts of human trafficking. But what I would invite you to do is use that as a moment to invite your community organizations to that lunch as well. And maybe we can help you jumpstart your own task force or your own movement within your community. That's our vision. So that's a sign-up sheet in the back. Okay. I think one of the last empowerment ones is the Nazarene Compassionate Ministries has added two affinity groups that are sensitive to me. One is emergency response. That's another area that I'm passionate for, which, by the way, when you think of natural disasters in this world, earthquakes, hurricanes, tsunamis, what happens? People are displaced, famines develop, political leadership comes in and becomes dictatorships, and you have people that are displaced. And when they're displaced, they're going to do just about anything they can to survive. And now we just introduce them into human trafficking. The other passion for me is terrorism. I want to fight terrorism. And what we're finding is the terrorist organizations are using human trafficking to fund their efforts. So what's the umbrella of social injustice here? It's human trafficking. It's the misuse of people, and it's for the funding of these things that are wrong. Well, Nazarene Compassionate Ministries is dealing with emergency management and response, but now they're also taking on human trafficking. So we, as a Nazarene church, have that empowerment. We have those resources. So it's not just Olivet saying, we'll come help you, but it's Nazarene Compassionate Ministries that wants to invest in your church. The general superintendents are giving the stamp of approval for you to proceed, and that's very exciting. So let's really quick define some of this, because Natalie should be telling me I'm almost out of time. I already implied that we're dealing with sex trafficking and we're dealing with labor trafficking. So the key to this slide is it's the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000. Okay, that's 15 years ago, friends. How many people were aware of what was happening 15 years ago? Thank you. Most of us, I'm not scolding you, but most people have not opened their eyes yet, as that video was saying. So I'm empowering all of you to go out and start talking about this because it's real. We know that the community's already been active. Legislation has been enacted. Federal authorities, the FBI, have been investigating cases actively. They themselves will tell you they have not done a good job. They've been learning. They also have had a hard time collecting data, keeping the statistics. So we're always growing and maturing. This is a progressive movement. But back in 2000, they defined sex trafficking, as you see on that screen. That is the official definition. Focusing on force, fraud, and coercion. Now, take away from that someone who is prostituting himself or herself willingly. Now, I dare you to find out who's doing that willingly. Like, who says, I want to grow up to sell my body? There's really no victims out there that are doing that. They are forced to do it, probably because someone is threatening their family members, they're threatening themselves, they've addicted them to drugs, and now they're doing it to be able to buy those drugs. So we have other underlying issues. That's a whole topic in and of itself. Okay? This is when I throw erasers to wake up my students, just so you know, or I bang on the table. emphasizing here, sex trafficking, in the midst of this, you have three key things. You have the trafficker, you have a buyer, the customer, and you have a victim. Literally, 15 years ago, it would have been taught that prostitution is a victimless crime. That is changing now because people are starting to realize there's a component to the dynamic of someone being a victim. And I would want you to leave here knowing you're learning a victim-centered approach. We have to look at it from that point of view. The other side is labor trafficking, which gets into sexual assault as well, but it doesn't always involve that. And this is another reason that I have an issue with statistical data and scientific studies versus stories of situations, because everything varies. Some of you told various stories of that were all unique. So we can hear stories of a migrant worker that comes to America. They're legitimate in their effort to move from state to state, season to season. They just want to work. They want to raise money for their family. You can't fault them for that. But they get someone who takes them and takes their visa and their passport and says, "Now, I've got control over you." And they're going to manipulate what they do. Now, this is happening in businesses in the urban areas. It's also happening with migrant workers in the rural areas. But now throw into that, they also take them behind the barn and say, "If you don't perform a sex act with me," and obviously they're not going to say it so intelligently, but it's that manipulation and force. So now you've got the merging of labor trafficking and sex trafficking, sexual exploitation at the same time. That's why we have to combine it in at the same. So let's talk about some of my handpicked terminology. When we talk about international human trafficking issues, we're dealing with traffickers. We have, it's proven that billions of dollars is trafficked through arms, firearms, explosive weapons, as well as drugs. Trafficking, things are being transported, distributed, and now we're dealing with human beings. So traffickers fits that whole thing. And that's what we're talking about with drug dealers and gangs and terrorists. They're doing all of that. They're smuggling weapons and they're smuggling drugs and they're smuggling people. The concern with customs and border control is not only smuggling of people for human trafficking, but it's smuggling of terrorists. They're getting them into the country unnoticed because they're obviously on the red flag that they're not supposed to be in the country. So all of these routes and avenues and ways of doing it are being used for multiple purposes. That's the war that we have going on. But I'm here to tell you there's studies going on that are showing that people are having issues politically about immigration. In America, the big thing is Mexico and America, and we have illegal aliens. And people get all upset about that. It's one thing to deal with that, but it's another when people say, "Well, I don't care about human trafficking. I just care about people coming into our country and taking our jobs." So now we got this whole emotional thing and political thing going on that is yet another attitude issue that we have to deal with. And when you open this can of worms, you're going to be dealing with that. But I take you back to the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. Okay? Human beings is what we're talking about. Human trafficking. We got to pull away from all of that for a while. Okay, so what's the difference between trafficker and pimp? Well, a pimp is a modern term that's used in America, and this is a whole nother study when you look at the pimp culture and all of that, and I encourage you to look at that on your own. But maybe you didn't know, but there's two definitions of pimps nowadays. There's the Romeo and there's the gorilla. The Romeo is the one that romances and lures the men, and the gorilla is the one that uses force and intimidation. And a Romeo can become a gorilla very quickly. That's part of the psychology behind it. So when you got a victim, they're going through this manipulation. Thank you, Natalie. I've got 5 minutes. Facilitator is someone that's making it happen. This is what you can be aware of in your communities with the hotels, motels, truck stops that are turning their head, allowing it to happen because it's supporting their business in a sense. The Johnner buyer, when you think about in law enforcement, they find a dead body, they don't know who it is. It's a Jane Doe or a John Doe, right? And that's the concept here. That's where we get the terminology of a John. It's an anonymous person. The buyer wants to remain anonymous, and that's the issue we have. We have pastors, clergy, politicians, law enforcement officers, doctors, lawyers, anybody you can think of, they are keeping it secret. You're finding out on the news today that there's a retired Illinois legislator that is now being indicted, and they're saying that in his past he was a teacher and a coach, and he was using money to get someone not to reveal something that he did that he shouldn't have done years ago. And they're suspecting it had something to do with a minor and sex. So we'll find out how that goes. But the deal is anonymity and people concealed. That is what's going on with the John. Seasoning is a term that is used in human trafficking. I'd like to focus on this briefly to say that we're dealing with victims who have been manipulated psychologically, emotionally, and physically. That's why we need agencies like Casey Casa, who are really knowledgeable in sexual assault, domestic violence. All of those dynamics apply directly to what we're talking about with human trafficking. So when you work with your community, you really do want to align yourself with a sexual assault agency, if you have one. If not, find one somewhere near your area and bring those experts into the discussion. So here's the role. This is a slide you already saw, but I'm just bringing up specifically that you need to pray. I'm encouraging you to pray that God will raise up people besides yourself that can serve to stand in that gap, to be the advocates for these oppressed individuals. I encourage you to raise awareness in your congregation and your community. We're willing to support you. There's lots of websites out there and agencies to support you. I encourage you to partner with the agencies in your community. Don't go around them. There's horror stories of churches going to a hotel and protesting the fact that they're facilitators, only to find out later they just ruined a law enforcement investigation that had been going on for months. And so now you have an issue there of trust and relationships. So as a church, we should develop trusting relationships with our partnering agencies. And they're wanting faith-based organizations to get involved, but we need to do it in a healthy way. And how do you provide? What are the provisions? Well, certainly prayer over everybody. Pray for your law enforcement. Pray for your judges. Pray for your agencies like Cheryl is representing, because they deal with this burden every day. They're dealing with the victims by name. But it's not only giving money to help those organizations, which they always do need funds, but many of them will do like care packages for the victims. Things that contain feminine hygiene articles or whatever. Something to help them get over that first 24 hours after they're maybe trying to get away. So there's lots of ways, including one that we haven't looked at, is how can we help shelter, whether it's staff, a facility that is sheltering large numbers, or maybe like foster care in a sense, but there's dynamics there of security that have to be dealt with. But provisions, it's the church that has to start giving. It can't just be governmental money, it can't be grant money. The church has to start investing. So there's your three takeaways. Pray, partner, provide. But I wanted to say realistically what I just said. The key is develop real, legitimate, trusting relationships with those organizations in your community. Partner with them. You can't do it on your own as a church. Your community is wondering, they're scratching their head, wondering why aren't the churches stepping forward and helping. But it's a trust issue, I'm afraid. My last point, how much time? 30 seconds? Or am I over? Please put in your cell phone right now or write down on paper so that you can put in your cell phone the National Human Trafficking Hotline. They have it worded in such a way, well, actually, that is the right way, but it's normally said 1-888-3737-888. So the three eights are together and the 3737 are together. It's a nice way to remember it. So 1-888-3737-888. If you try to memorize that, you probably won't. But put it in your cell phone. And this is what I'm challenging you to do. If you're anywhere and you see something that you think, and then you go, well, what is the something? What are the red flags? Well, we have this agency's flyer that gives you some bullet items, some red flag items that you should watch for. But you have every right as a citizen to call that number and tell them information that you find suspicious. Now, as a past police officer, this is what I'm encouraging you to do. Be sensitive to this, keep your eyes open, and if you can, get a license plate and a description of a vehicle. Call that in and tell them what was suspicious and give them something that they can investigate back on, which is that vehicle. But you have no grounds to go approach somebody. You would be putting yourself in harm's way. These people are smart. They would be able to make it look normal and innocent. The best thing you can do is empower this organization to investigate further on your behalf and our behalf, okay? So, any thoughts or questions right now? Ma'am.
I was reading this paper here.
You've got it. Yeah, in Illinois.
And it says,